May it please the court. The issue in this case is a simple one, really. Whether the services in the contract, which included materials, fabrication, and installation, were part of the sale. It is simple because the commission already concluded that, quote, the services and materials are parts of a single sale. And they were. I just wanted to highlight a few critical facts for the court's consideration as I go through the analysis. First, Bartlett purchased parts for a grain conveyor, but that purchase is not at issue and obviously subject to tax. Bartlett then contracted with CR Conveyor to fabricate and install parts, those parts of the grain conveyor. And of course, this was much more than just delivery and snapping those parts in place. Under the contract, CR had to fabricate an entire support structure with concrete footings, beams, ladders, and platforms. And CR charged over $250,000 in taxable materials to do that work. Now, under the plain language of the statute, a tax is imposed on the sale price of any purchase. And then it defines what sale price is to include, quote, any service, as long as the services are part of the sale. The language is explicitly broad, and as the any services would be. And under the plain language of the statute, there are really only two types of services that are not subject to tax. And those would be, one, if the service is not part of the sale, which we'll talk about in just a moment, or two, if the services are rendered in installing or applying the property, which is specifically in the statute. But Bartlett did not claim installation service, did not claim that exemption, and the commission did not analyze it either. Neither of those, I would say, exceptions or ways in which services are not taxable are met in this case. In fact, as I said, Bartlett never even claimed installation services. The services here were part of the sale. The commission recognized with its own language that the services and materials were part of a single sale. That language is not ambiguous, nor did the commission conclude the language was ambiguous. Yet the commission departed from that plain language of the statute because the materials in the contract were supposedly negligible or ancillary. Those words, that analysis is not in the statute. There is no reference to ancillary services in the statutes. And as a matter of fact, it's not true either. The taxable materials and fabrication constituted $257,000 of the contract. The labor, which was separately listed by Bartlett, or CR and Bartlett, as a generic term, actually is not really just service. If you look at the, and this is in Exhibit B, which is at the, in my appendix at A35, if you look at the description of what they're terming labor, it includes installation, but it includes fabrication. Many kinds of fabrication. And Bartlett has conceded that fabrication is taxable. Now, for some reason, the commission excluded in its analysis of the materials and the taxable fabrication item number one. And I'm not sure why the commission did that, because it is part of the sale. And in that, Bartlett had conceded over $150,000 worth of taxable fabrication. So that should be included in part of that sale. And under the plain language of the statute, the services here were part of the sale.
Do you agree that if it's a negligible part, then you don't have to pay taxes? Or where's the line?
Yeah, the statute doesn't say that. It says any services. But there has to be some line where, truly, if you've got a bolt and a screw or something like that, it doesn't subject everything else to tax. And I think this court perfectly answered that with the use of the true object test. Right? Now, the commission relies upon that true object test for an unusual analysis. But I think what this court did in several cases leading up to this, with the true object test, the examples I think are perfectly applicable. In that test, the court has repeatedly said, look, if you develop a software program or you've done something like that and you put it on a CD, right? The CD is nominally or negligibly a material that may cost a buck or 50 cents. But that's not the true object. They're looking at something much larger. And so that that captures that negligible, that captures that de minimis concept.
And opposing counsel says, while it's a larger amount than the crew or the city and so forth, the they purchased the conveyor elsewhere, and the primary object, the true object of this part of what they were doing was to install it, even though it involved $250,000 worth of materials. The object of it was to take what they purchased and make it functional for them. Yeah. So under the true object test, it's not taxable.
Well, I would agree. I would disagree that the true object was that all they were getting was the services, all they wanted. In fact, the description that the commission relies upon is the intro to the. Intro to the contract, and it says, labor, materials, and rentals to install, and so that it includes 2/3 of that are. Taxable items. Materials and rentals are both taxable. And labor is likely taxable too if it involves fabrication. But I think that also takes the true object test way beyond what this court had ever imagined with that true object test. That test has only ever been applied in circumstances in which we're talking about effectively intangible personal property, where you put a program, you've done something, you put it on a CD, drawings or something like that. All of the cases, which are the Tres Computers and Western Blueprint and so forth, those were all about you've got a de minimis material like a CD or something like that, when in fact the true
was
object
was. One of
was.
The examples like repairing a car and it's 50% labor and 50% repair parts, and they said that was only half taxable and half not?
Yeah, and that's an example in the regulations. That's not an example from this court.
So you think that does not accurately reflect what's in the statute?
That's probably not accurately what's in the statute. This court developed the true object test, and I think rightfully so, for circumstances in which you've got some very small de minimis material when in fact the true object is this much greater service that is not taxable.
So here we have a separate vendor providing the labor as opposed to the vendor who sold the parts to the taxpayer. Yeah. How does that play into being the part of the sale?
Yeah, I suppose it plays into it to a degree, and I would probably maybe clarify or refine your question in this way, and that is because it wasn't just we bought the materials from one and we got the labor from the other. That's not actually true. They bought substantial materials and fabrication from one, including, as I said, $250,000 worth of materials. The materials, the miscellaneous materials alone, which include ladders, thousands of feet of piping and grading and all of that. So it's unfair to sort of characterize it as we bought the materials from one, we bought the labor from the other.
You're saying they didn't buy a conveyor system, they bought part of the conveyor system and the rest, and then they had the rest of the conveyor system built.
That's exactly right. They bought parts of it. And the best example I could give of this, and I've seen many grain conveyors, and I'm sure everyone on the court has too. I don't know how exactly all they work. Here they contracted with CR to put in concrete footings and beams and ladders and platforms. That's pretty substantial. And the best sort of everyday example I could think of is when you contracted with somebody to do a custom made motorcycle. They purchased from one, maybe the engines and the wheels and the tires, and then they went to another and said, we need you to build the framework for it. We need you to build the frame to put those things in. And that's really what we're talking about here.
Well, where's the distinction if I go buy a stack of bricks and I hire somebody to come by and just lay the bricks? In other words, they're going to use concrete, and they're going to buy some sand for the base. Right. I mean,
yeah,
everything is relative, right?
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Everything is relative, but the statute says any service as part of that contract. And maybe that's closer to the line. I don't think we're anywhere close to the line here. I mean, we'll get to a point at which it becomes what's the true object of that. But this case isn't anywhere near that line. Isn't anywhere close to it. And in that instance, like the bricks, for example, that might qualify as installation labor. But they did not argue for or assert installation labor as an exemption and an exception that's provided for in the statute. And they haven't. And the commission also didn't conclude that it was installation labor. And even the so it wasn't as, you know, it wasn't so disproportionate in the sense of maybe somebody's hired, all the materials are purchased, and all they do is put things in place. This is the cases that have analyzed this in that kind of framework have been looking at putting in an appliance, right? You just put the appliances and plug it in. Those are cases in which they've analyzed and it's been closer to that, is that service. But even in those instances, this court has concluded, even if it's just delivery, you know, that could also be, and that's a pretty small piece of that. But even in those instances, it's been questionable as to whether or not that's part of the same sale. Here is much more than that. We're talking about even just miscellaneous materials, almost $60,000.
What about the intent of the parties? How does that weigh in to being part of the sale?
Yes, that's the overall analysis. What is the intent of the parties?
And your opponent says it was not our intent.
Right. They certainly argue that was not their intent. But I think the evidence, as we look at the evidence and the contract in particular, and if you look at Exhibit B, it says to install. Now, they didn't claim installation, but it says the contract, the intent of the contract was labor, materials, and rentals to install customer supply conveying for this dryer system. So they intended fabrication. They intended the making of the entire support structure. That's all part of this contract, and it's a huge part of it. It wasn't all we intended was for you to snap it in place, and if that's this standard all you have to do is have some service or a majority of the service, that's inconsistent with the statute, and in this case would be contrary to the facts as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Derek Teeter for the respondent. One thing that wasn't said in my opponent's argument was the standard of review that actually applies to this case. And what I heard counsel arguing was a very eloquent argument about what the evidence supported or didn't support with respect to factual findings. This court reviews the findings of the Administrative Hearing Commission under substantial and competent evidence standard of review. So if there was evidence in the record that would allow a reasonable fact finder to conclude that Bartlett did not intend for these services to be part of the sale, or if there was evidence in the record that would allow a reasonable fact finder to conclude that true object was a service, not personal property, this case is over, and it should be affirmed. On the true object piece alone, I heard counsel admit that less than 50% of the cost of the CR contract was for materials, meaning a majority was for service.
So is that something any case has said? You look at what you spend the most on, and that's the true object?
Not at all. It's not a per se rule, but it is substantial evidence. It is substantial evidence.
But that would be a legal question. I mean, is there a legal standard whether 50% is a cutoff or is it negligible? Because we're looking at what the statute says. And it says, and can you address the specific statutory language?
Sure, Your Honor. And the statutory language is actually a little bit more precise than what counsel described. So this is at 144.605(8), which is the definition of sales price. Now, this is actually part of the sales tax code, which is sort of ported over by the use tax code, which I'll mention in a moment. But the operative phrase is including any services that are a part of the sale. So there are two key sort of words or clauses in that larger phrase. One is including, which counsel didn't talk about, and the commission construed the word including to refer to the addition of something to a larger whole using the dictionary definition, and construing this taxation statute narrowly in favor of the taxpayer. Then there's the question of including any services that are part of the sale. Well, what sale are we talking about here?
Right.
In Missouri, the default rule is that the sale of tangible property is subject to tax. The sale of services are not subject to tax unless there's a specific statute that makes them so. So the commission, I think, rightly construed this to say services are taxable when they are included in the sale of tangible personal property. So there's two questions then built up into that. One, do you have services and property that are part of the same sale? And if so, is it fair to characterize that sale as one of tangible personal property? Or instead, is it primarily a sale of a service, in which case the personal property is ancillary?
And where in the statute does it say that, or where do we get that?
Well, he's getting that, and I think correctly, from a couple of things. One, the word including, which mm-hmm. refers to the addition of something to a larger whole. Second, the fact that if you go to the use tax statute, so this is section 144.610, so this is the actual operative taxing statute, even though it borrows a definition. The use tax statute says a tax is imposed for the privilege of storing, using, or consuming within this state any article of tangible personal property. It doesn't reference service under the use tax statute. And it says that tax is imposed in an amount equivalent to the percentage imposed on the sales price. That's a defined term in the sales tax code. So at a minimum, you have an ambiguity here as to what the intent of the legislature was with use tax. And the commissioner went back and looked at Your Honor's previous precedent describing the use tax statute and said the purpose of this law was really to address the situation where a Missouri resident goes out of state to buy something and avoids paying the sales tax. And that's an intent then to tax goods, not to tax services in the first instance. So you only pull services into this taxing scheme when they are part of the sale of tangible personal property.
And what's the sale here?
So I think the court should conceptualize sale essentially as the party's bargain. So you would decide whether or not there was a combined sale of goods and personal property by asking, was it bargained for collectively or was it bargained for separately? That's how I would construe the court's prior cases dealing with delivery charges and installation charges, where you're sort of saying, look, they bought one thing first and then they talked about the second thing, and so they're conceptually distinct. Here, there were multiple transactions, and part of, I think, the challenge is that the primary argument actually made by the director below was that you ought to conflate the sale of the actual conveyor components from GSI with the sale of the services with CRC. And the commissioner rejected that out of hand because they're different vendors. Now the argument is a little more precise. It's, I think, saying that you ought to look at the entirety of the sale with CRC and sort of decide whether or not that meets the definition.
Well, what about Mr. Morgan says the invoice or the contract said materials, labor, and rentals. So wasn't that all part of one transaction? Is that what you're saying we look at?
Well, I think it's ultimately a question of fact what the sale is, because it can't devolve into a question of what's on a single sheet of paper. You can buy different things from an entity and have them appear on a single sheet of paper. That doesn't make them a combined sale. So for example, if I decide I need a minivan for my wife to drive with our kids and I want a new car because my sedan's going out, and I go to a dealership and I negotiate prices for both, and I say, write this up for me, and they put it on one sheet of paper, in some sense you could say that's a sale.
But we're talking about one conveyor system being installed at the location. So
well, there are two things, Your Honor, and if you look at Exhibit 11 in the record, I think this will become apparent. There was item number one, which was really a superstructure, and you'll see this in the photographs. It's a 20 or 30 foot tall sort of metal apparatus that supports the conveyor as it descends from the top of the elevator down to the grain dryer on the ground level. That was item one. Items two through five were the installation of the conveyor components that were bought from GSI. So I think you actually can conceptualize two different sales.
Well, let's start with one though.
Yes.
The supporting structure. If that was all they bought and they didn't buy installation of it, you would agree that they can't break out the raw materials and the fabricating labor that went into the structure that they bought.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, and there's a couple reasons for that. This term fabrication is an extra statutory term. It's not referenced in the statute. It's not referenced in the case law. It was referenced in the regulation. The commissioner said that's actually not consistent with the statute, so I find that provision to be invalid. That's not been appealed. I credit that at some point there's not a bona fide way to separate certain types of labor from a finished good. And the regulation actually speaks to that as the question, is the labor separable from the item?
Well, and my point is fabricating labor would seem to be on the far side of the line.
It depends what we mean by fabricating, and ultimately that's a fact question because that's not a magic term, I guess is my point. And the commissioner here heard testimony about what labor actually went in to installing these things and made a factual finding that the true object was a non-taxable service. So I think it's a fact question. I think whether or not it was a single sale is a fact question.
But what Mr. Morgan makes the argument that, and if you just had to add some parts and things to put up something they bought, that there's some line there which you all may or may not ever agree on,
right.
But someplace. But here it was not simply, not just de minimis, but not simply what was needed to put something up. It was $250,000 worth of material needed to. So it was part of the it was the structure itself. It wasn't simply something used to install a previously purchased structure.
Right.
But obviously it's the purpose is to have a working conveyor. But when I buy a new dishwasher, my purpose is not the service. My purpose is to have a new dishwasher. Your purpose here is to have a new conveyor, which includes the structure, because it doesn't do you any good if it's not connected.
Well, I guess, Your Honor, in one sense, the end purpose of this series of contracts was to have a working conveyor, but that's not how the taxing statute works. It defines sales price as the consideration paid between a buyer and a vendor,
and
not
so
a
you're
buyer
separating
and a series
it out
of vendors.
Right, so it's only the middle one, but I understand your argument there, if your purpose was to get a working conveyor, you could have spent 90% on materials and you'd still say the purpose was the service of getting a working conveyor to that second vendor.
I suspect, Your Honor.
I don't think you would, but tell me what the line is.
I think, Your Honor, the line is a question of fact. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, I cannot give the court a legal test that will cleanly say where the line is, nor do I think Mr. Morgan can. Which is all the more reason why you ought to defer the factual findings that we made here.
Well, but was there a factual finding as to labor that was fabrication, shop labor, and labor that was installation? It seems in reading the AHC opinion that the focus was on on-site installation, which ignores quite a bit, a large percentage of all the labor that's in that contract.
Well, there was testimony from Harold Arnold, who's the manager of the St. Joseph Elevator, who spoke to the actual labor that went into assembling and installing the conveyor components. He was the only witness that testified on this point. The state did not put up its own witness. Mr. Arnold testified the labor consisted primarily of bolting together pre-assembled pieces of conveyor that came on trucks supplied by GSI. That testimony was not challenged or refuted. I would also say, Your Honors, that this has been described as Bartlett buying conveyor parts from GSI, but if Your Honors will review Exhibit 23 in the record, which is the actual quotation from GSI, it doesn't say conveyor parts. It says enclosed belt conveyor. It says en masse chain conveyor. We purchased a conveyor from GSI. We hired a different company to install it. And the commission said the true object of that second arrangement with CRC was non-taxable labor. Yes, there were tangible personal properties that were components of that, and to be clear, we paid use tax on all the line items of tangible personal property. So we're not trying to hide from taxation of what is indisputably materials. All that tax has been paid. This case is about whether or not the department can expand the taxation to capture services
And if I understood the last question, it's that but you're calling installation things that aren't part of the installation but actually are fabrication of additional items. That the actual installation part of what you purchased, I think the director's saying would be deductible under a different, or not included under a different subsection, but not under that one. And there's no need to have the installation be considered part of this, not includable under this general provision because there's a specific one which you chose not to go under. But that calling out installation, I mean, that's a label, but in fact installing the conveyor that you purchased was part of it, but a lot of it was manufacturing, fabricating lots of things that were used to provide a structure in which you could install. the conveyor. And those are, well, and you can't put those together as if they're one process. So address why that's not correct.
If you go that way, Your Honor, we still win this case.
No, I'm just asking, is that correct or why? I'm not going anyway. I want you to address
that's the argument I hear Mr. Morgan
right,
making.
And can you address that argument? Because just by saying, using the word installation, why is this distinction not proper?
That's partly my point, Your Honor. There are no magic terms. This is ultimately the intent of the parties and the true object of the transaction. And I credit that there is some labor that is not fairly separable from a finished good. For example, if I go buy a brand new Buick from the car dealership, I don't think there's a bona fide way for the dealership to separate out the cost it took an individual to turn the bolts on the lug nuts.
And I was going more specifically to Mr. Morgan's argument that while you call it all installation, only a small part of that was actually installation labor. Mm. A lot of the other labor was for other things. So is that a correct characterization?
Item number one is where Mr. Morgan was talking about concrete footings and large steel I-beams. That's item number one.
Okay.
We paid the fabrication labor on item number one.
Okay.
We paid it because their regulations said we were supposed to. It was not an admission that somehow fabrication is a magic term. We're trying to abide by the reg. Items two through five were for installing the pre-assembled conveyor components from GSI. And if you look at the invoices, the labor for items two through five is described as labor, whereas on item one, you have an actual fabrication line item. So that is a sufficient factual basis for the commission here, especially in light of Mr. Arnold's testimony, to say there's a qualitative difference between what was called fabrication on item one, this massive support structure,
and you did pay
and what
on
was
that.
Referred to as labor on items two through five. And yes, we paid the fabrication as it was defined under item
one. So are you saying items two through five were not fabrication?
Correct. Well, as we're sort of using that term in this sense here.
It's not a defined term. If we take the motorcycle analogy of Mr. Morgan, and he's saying they bought the conveyor belt is the engine and tires and something else, and that the contract was for construction of the frame, you're saying that you paid tax on the construction of the frame, you did not pay tax on the attachment of the motor and the tires to the frame. Is that a correct understanding of your argument?
I think that's close, Your Honor. I'll make one minor tweak to it. If you look at the materials that were actually parts of items two through five, they're not substantive components of the conveyor. They're things like braces and anchors. So it's not quite analogous. I mean, a frame is sort of an integral part of a motorcycle. The materials used in the items two through five were things to essentially mount it and level it on top of the elevator. Where that line is, again, I think is a question of fact, but the commissioner had before him the testimony of Mr. Arnold, who said this largely consisted of bolting. The commissioner had before him these invoices that only use the term fabrication on item one, where it's undisputed we paid fabrication labor. And you had these definitions of materials in items two through five as being sort of things like brackets and bolts that have no inherent value but for their utility in installing something.
The quote on two through five uses in-shop labor to fabricate and then list it.
Right.
On-site labor to install and list it. But when it comes to the total, it's all jumbled in together as labor. Why isn't there a meaningful distinction in this case between fabrication labor, as you admit in one, or as you paid in one, and installation on-site labor, which is part but not all of two through five?
So, I see I'm out of time, but I'd love to answer your question, Your Honor. Item number one uses the phrase fabricating structure. Fabricating structure, not just fabricating structure. And there was visual evidence and testimony before the commission about what that structure looked like and what it took to create it. And CRC basically took I-beams and other, you know, sort of unfinished components, put them together into this support structure. On items two through five, the record reflected that those things referred to as fabricating there were bolts and braces and those sorts of things. And Mr. Arnold testified what the work really involved in items two through five, which was largely bolting together and then leveling on top of the on top of the elevator, those items. So there is a qualitative difference. There was a factual basis for the commissioner to make a qualitative difference. And counsel may disagree with that finding now, but he's not explained to the court why it wasn't based upon substantial and competent evidence.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honors. Let me be clear. The commission actually found, this is the quote, the services and materials are parts of a single sale. Right? So I'm not actually disputing that fact finding. That fact finding is in my favor. And that is, these are part of the same sale. And that is the statutory language. Now, it's respondents who are claiming, they're effectively, that it's not part of the same sale. I'm not disputing that. The commission concluded that. And really, it comes down to a legal conclusion, a legal analysis. Does that language mean that if the services, if the materials are, quote, ancillary, end quote, to the sale of some services, does that mean that it doesn't qualify under the statute? That's really the legal question before the court. And the answer is no, there's no standard for ancillary separate from are they part of the same sale. Now, I will agree that there is an exception or a limitation on sort of de minimis, and that's the true object test. But that's not really what we have here. We're not talking about the delivery of something that is in the regulations. It says delivery is something that can be discarded or not used anymore. We're not talking about a CD case or something like that. We're talking about an entire support structure. And to the point of that was argued that item one is something completely separate. I mean, this is the quote. It's item one through item five. It's all part of the exact same quote. It's all part of the same invoice. It's no different. It's all part of the same thing. And there's no way that the conveyor system could sit there and do anything without that support structure.
So are you saying it would be inappropriate to say, well, the fabrication labor is taxable, but the other labor is not because it's all part of one sale, so
it is
just not how the statute's set up.
That's not how the statute works. It's all part of the same sale. And to be fair, I mean, you know.
What if the second vendor just decided for whatever reason not to participate? They had agreed. They'd agreed to show up and do it, but then just didn't.
And what did they do? All that they did was.
It could be different things. They could get a different vendor.
Right.
Right. Go hire somebody else, not part of this contract at all.
Right.
They could try to use their own in-house labor to finish it.
Sure.
But
so all they did was.
It's difficult for me to say how that's all one sale when it required two different entities to come to two different complete contracts.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, this didn't. I'm not talking about the purchase of the conveyor system. All I'm talking about is just this contract with CR Conveying, mm-hmm. which unquestionably included 60,000 worth of purely materials, and then in addition to that, 150,000 or more of fabrication, which is more than just labor. It's the creation of tangible personal property. And so the total in this contract alone, the total taxable materials is over $257,000.
So and it says below you argued all three had to be considered one sale. You're not making that argument.
No, we're not making that argument. That is, you know, we understand that there were three separate contracts here. The one was the purchase of the dryer, and that was ruled against them. That they didn't appeal that. The one was the purchase of the conveyor parts. And admittedly, these are, I'm not saying, you know, this is like snapped together. They're getting huge pieces of this conveyor, and then they're then putting it together and putting it on a support structure. And then the third one is this contract for materials, installation, and rentals to put it all together. And it's true that they are installing it, but it's not separable in that sense. And I'm out of time, but I'll just say, if you go through Exhibit B and you look at the description of installation and fabrication, I mean, we're not talking about we're bolting things in. This is the language that they rolled up into what they call labor. It says things like, you know, fabricate supports for wet belt, fabricate transitions, you know, fabricate wet corn leg braces. I mean, those are significant. For that reason, we ask the court reverse the Administrative Hearing Commission and conclude, in accordance with their finding and the law, that this is part of one sale.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.